Hi, I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story Is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality they see below the surface.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and this is episode number 51.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 51. And today we're going to do something a little bit different. This is not a work of fiction that we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about Introduction to the Devout Life. It is the, right? Introduction to the Devout Life by St. Francis de Sales.
Oh, good job.
Thank you very much.
St.
Francois de Sales. No, I don't know.
De Sales. No, not Sales. Sales.
Ah, Sales, right.
Okay. This book was first published in 1609, so it's super old.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so instantly popular that by 1656, it had been translated into no fewer than 17 languages. And I'm thinking, I guess they knew enough countries that they had 17 languages to translate it into, but that's kind of like everything, I think.
That's like almost as many languages as this podcast has been translated into.
Oh, yes. Well, of course. We're so international.
That's right. That's right. But yeah, it is impressive, isn't it? And in the 1600s, no less.
Well, that's the thing.
Takes a little effort to do that.
Yeah. So it started because he was asked by a lady at court. She was the wife of the ambassador to Savoy, I believe, because that was still a kingdom of its own, how you could live a good life, a devout life, with all the distractions and temptations at court. And he wrote her a lot of letters, and then I think, and I would have to look this up, but she shared them around, or people found out about them, and he was asked about them, and so he put them into a book. And in the introduction, he even says, you know, I'm a bishop, I'm kind of busy. This really, don't really have time for this. And then he stops and says, well, except isn't this the most important thing of all?
Yeah.
So, of course, I should make time for it.
Yeah, and that's really interesting. As you read it, you know, the chapters are fairly short usually, and sometimes they kind of end, and then they're picked up again in the next chapter. So that kind of explains how that happens. You know, I remember one chapter heading that was the same as the previous chapter, comma, continued.
Yes.
So he must have sent a letter out or something and then said, I'm not finished talking about that, so I'll do
some
more.
Well, it makes it easy to understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can just consume a little chunk of it and kind of think about it or not.
Yeah, and again, you know, written in 1609, you know, when we read stuff that's this old, you know, this is probably the oldest thing we've read. It strikes me, I don't know if it's heartening or disheartening that people in 1609 were dealing with almost the exact same types of things that we deal with in 2013. This could have been written it's timeless. This could have been written, you know, yesterday.
Oh, there is no doubt.
Yeah.
Except for the natural history part.
Right.
Those are the parts
except
where I
stop
and
that.
Go, what?
Yeah.
Bees hold on to pebbles to keep from winds from blowing them away. Wait, hold on. those examples didn't really work for me. But
right,
other than
right.
that, this, to me, it's heartening. But I guess I see what you're saying. But you know what it does is it kind of, to me, proves the same point as reading Genesis, which is that we personally each start off at zero. It's not like we evolved from what people have done before us.
Mm-hmm.
We each have to find our own path.
Right.
So we all need this advice.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was thinking about it because I was thinking, well, if you're not maybe, well, I guess if you're not Christian, you might have turned it off at this point. Sorry, guys. I said, well, what's next time?
Mm-hmm.
But why?
Oh, I should mention. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Sorry to interrupt. I should mention that Tam said he would not listen to this podcast unless we mention him. So we probably should not mention him.
Tam Ahomey. I'm sorry. I mentioned him by accident just
Oops,
now.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Oh, that's fine.
And I don't. I've never gotten a vibe from him one way or the other, so he may have stopped listening right now. But I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, you know, it kind of raises the question, why does somebody want to live a devout life? Why would you read the book?
Yeah, yeah.
And I asked the question, so you could try to answer it.
Why would someone want to live a devout life? I should say first thing, this book is really, really well written.
Agreed.
Before we get into it. I feel that he spends too much time on examples.
Right.
Right? And some of them are of the natural history type that you say, you know, it's like, okay, I've got it. But then he says, and another example or something like that, you know, and he may go on for another page or something. And I felt sometimes that didn't add to it for me, but it's really well written. I don't know what translation that I have.
Mine is by Michael Day.
Is it? Okay. I should have looked that up. I have it on the Kindle. I should have looked up who did it. Okay. So why live a devout life? That's not an easy question to answer. When you think about God and you think about the commandments and things, I was just talking to confirmation class yesterday about how the commandments, if you took God out of the equation, the commandments, the Ten Commandments would be a pretty darn good list of things to follow.
Mm-hmm.
Because they contribute to a good life. And
right.
An enjoyable life as well. You know, so many people think that God is restricting, but God is actually very freeing because, in that presidential campaign, I don't recall the guy's name, but he kept saying, it's not Romney. It's, the Catholic guy who was running against Romney.
No, not Santorum.
Santorum, that's him.
Oh, okay.
So Rick Santorum would always say things like, hey, if you don't have kids until you're married, you have, I can't remember the exact number, 85% chance of not being in poverty. And he was just using, you know, throwing statistics out. Well, you know, if you remove God from the equation, there's evidence that God has our best interests at heart.
Right.
So he's not, the Ten Commandments are not full of things that are restrictive and ridiculous. They are full of things that make your life better, whether you go to church or not.
Yeah, it's good to not have people murdered.
It's good.
It's good to not steal stuff.
Exactly.
It's to have your stuff stolen.
So from that is where I could say is the beginning of my desire to want to have a devout life, because from that comes a trust. From that, I say, okay, God gave me this. I can see that that is good, and I can see that perhaps going deeper for me would be beneficial. And I know that I've talked on this podcast before about how I've jumped around, and when I was in confirmation class, I fell away and eventually came back. But on that road back, I read a lot of different stuff. I looked at, you know, not seriously looking, but I'm talking about bouncing around like a, to use a natural history metaphor, like a bee on flowers or whatever. So I should spend a page here describing that. But I'm just saying that I dipped in a little bit. I would listen to these lectures. Like I recall a teaching company lecture series on the five greatest religions of the world. And then I would listen to the Christianity and Hinduism and Buddhism and Judaism and Islam, right? So you listen to all those and you say, how, you know, that's really, really interesting. But it was not until I made the decision to stop bouncing around and go deeper into one thing, which was the Catholic Church, that I was able to reach an inner calm that I didn't have before. And the deeper that I go into it, the more I receive that. And the more that I feel that I'm doing the right thing, and the more that I feel that I'm looking at truth here.
You know, that's interesting because we did not talk about this before. And when I was thinking about it, I was like, for me, it's that seeking the devout life is, it's about peace. Mm-hmm. And you said that inner calm and peace, and because everything fits better. You're living in a way that, you know, you're not angry. You're not as distressed. Now, I can be angry and distressed, but not as much. Yeah. And I'm not mad at myself as much over things that I do that I wish I hadn't done. Mm-hmm. I still fail, but I have a way to kind of come back. There's a method. And plus there's, you know, having made fun of the natural history examples, what you were talking, I was kind of looking at the beginning going, does he talk about it? And he's talking really just about trying to get to heaven, which is, of course, the ultimate goal. But he's saying it's, you know, hens fly, but clumsily and not very high. And he's right. He says, but eagles, doves, and swallows soar upward swiftly and frequently. It allows us to soar. Mm-hmm. And then another example he had was, you know, if you've just recovered from an illness, you can't walk very far, you're in pain. It's like, this is like somebody who's not as devout. And the more devout you get, which means really being closer to God, then you can run and leap and bound and feel great. And that's kind of a clumsy way to describe spiritually what you feel when you strive to become more devout.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have these moments of complete clarity. And there was inside me a need for thanksgiving. And I think I've said that before. I needed to do something to offer thanksgiving. And the Catholic Church, because I seem to be built this way, it seems to be, to me, seems to be very true. And mm-hmm. there were times when I would be asked questions or something like that, and I would say, well, this is how I think it should be. Let me go look it up. And I'd go look it up, and I was right. So there was kind of a synergy there that it made total sense to me and continues to make total sense to me here like 15 years later. Mm-hmm. So it's a complete thing. I mean, that's kind of what we do here. You know, when I read a novel, I could see that in a light of what I see as the truth. And we can see things in there that ring true to us. And that's what we talk about on this podcast.
Yeah, and that's why we can look at this book and say, you know, here so many hundreds of years later, it's still true.
Yeah.
Because there are things you could just recognize in yourself or other people, although he really is not talking about other people much. He's talking about each person dealing with themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's all true.
Right, right. So, you know, you kind of had an idea of how we could talk about this book. You know, surely, you know, we can't treat this like a novel where we're just going to go through it all. You know, we'd be here for a long, long time. Because, you asked me earlier in an email, you know, what did you not like about the book? And I had a difficult time coming up with something specific because there was something in every chapter that would make me think or, mm-hmm. you know, there was a lot of aha moments and a lot of things that I really need to implement in my own life. Mm-hmm. But I think, like you said, I wrote down, I think I have four things here that I thought that really hit me. And I think you said you had a list kind of similar.
I have five or six that really struck me. I would like to say first, though, mm-hmm. just to tell, this book is in, there are many chapters, but it's in five sections.
Right.
There's Embracing the Devout Life, where he talks about what does that mean, and that's got it has a series of 10 meditations that you do one a day. Kind of helps you get centered. Mm-hmm. Then he's got Prayer and the Sacraments, where he talks about things like, oh, the necessity of prayer, asking God's help, you know, morning prayer, evening prayer, saints, that kind of thing. Then he talks about the practice of virtue. What are the virtues? You know, being patient, being gentle, being obedient, being all these things. And that's a really long section. And then he talks about overcoming temptations. Mm-hmm. We know what those are. So he talks about small ones, resisting small temptations, how to be stronger. And then the final one is renewal and preservation of devotion. So it's kind of a last self-examination before you kind of launch off to implement a lot of this stuff.
Right, right.
So just to give an overview of what the book's like, and a lot of small chapters, as you said. So anyway, so I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you didn't interrupt at all.
General idea.
That's perfect.
So, yes, for the what things did you like?
Okay, so I'll just start with the first one. You know, we talked about some of his natural history examples, and here's one that I absolutely loved and I held on to for the rest of the book. It's very near the beginning.
Okay.
It's his idea of a bouquet of flowers.
Yes.
Okay.
I like that too.
Oh, it was great. Okay, yes. here's a quote. Even so, the Holy Spirit of God disposes and arranges the devout teaching which he imparts through the lips and pen of his servants with such endless variety that although the doctrine is ever one and the same, their treatment of it is different, according to the varying minds whence that treatment flows. Assuredly, I neither desire nor ought to write in this book anything but what has already been said by others before me. I offer you the same flowers, dear reader, but the bouquet will be somewhat different from theirs, because it is differently made up.
Isn't that great?
Oh, it's just like, yeah. I mean, that really seeded that home to me. Because that's the Catholic Church. I mean, you know, people talk about, okay, you can go to a mass in Mexico and you've got some varying customs, but yet we're doing one and the same doctrine. And it should be that way all over the world. So, you know, one of the things that I just love about the Catholic Church is that everybody in the world's doing the same readings, you know?
Yeah.
But yet their customs are somewhat different. And, well, throughout history, some of the biggest successes in the history of Catholicism as it moved into new countries and things were the acceptance of some of the local customs rather than the rejection of those customs. When customs were rejected, they had trouble. And when they were accepted, they succeeded.
Because they could look at the customs and say, oh, I see, you know what, the ultimate truth that you have in this custom, we have that too.
Exactly. And that matches what we talked about with J.R.R. Tolkien, talking about how in these myths and in these customs, there are similarities and there's parts of the truth. And we should expect that, you know.
I know, which is really neat. And see, the thing I liked about it was taking that idea, and then he would take it and he'd say after, he kind of gets you in the habit of how you should think about prayer for the different meditations, where he'd say at the end of each one, he'd say, now take your spiritual bouquet. Think about what you're going to take away as your bouquet. And that was supposed to be a phrase, a thought, a line of scripture or something that really hit you. He goes, now that's yours to kind of use to refresh yourself with all day long, like you would a bouquet.
Yeah.
And I just loved that. So
I just love that idea. And what it makes me want to do is go get a notebook and start building one that's mine. That's what it makes me want to do. And I think that's what he would like me to do.
And I have actually, without realizing it, I kind of have a book like that. It's just a little brown notebook that I wrote prayers on the outside of. And when I come across prayers or, as it turns out, lines of scripture that really hit me, I write them down. And then I go back and look at them a lot. And sometimes I'll pick it up and go, I don't even remember why I wrote this down. But there are ones in there that really stay true the whole time.
Right, right.
So that was a good one.
Oh, thanks. Well, how about yours? Do you want to do one of yours?
Okay, I'll do one now. Mine was from fairly early in. It says, the task of purifying the soul cannot, may not end as long as we live. And that might seem kind of daunting, but for me, it was reassuring because when you have those times of thinking, oh, I did this again. Well, you know what? That's okay. I also have to sweep the floor every week, every day, sometimes the rest of my life. I have to make dinner. I have to wash the dishes. This is one of those things of life. So to think that I can get to a spot and then I'm done with that, that's not a natural way of thinking about it. So that kind of helps me give myself a break.
Yeah, and that's something this book helps me with too, because sometimes, you know, I feel like I'm a failure in this regard, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yet he says, not only in the way that you just said it, but he says elsewhere too, that what to do when you fall down. He says, you know, because you're gonna.
Yeah.
You're not perfect. And the idea that we're constantly improving towards perfection. Perfection is unattainable by us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a comforting thought to me too. And also when you're dealing with other people, that helps me with other people, because once I landed on the idea that everybody's kind of at a different spot and we may all be on the same path, but this guy may be a mile ahead of me and this person may be a mile behind me. It helps you. It helps with patience, which is another thing that he talks about.
And for me too, because one of those things that I keep thinking about in terms of that is one of the things this book did overall, and I don't think I wrote it down, but because he's really not talking about, and when you look at these people, he's always talking about you yourself looking internally, and it helped me a lot in the last few days even in terms of, no, I can't change them.
Hmm.
I can only change myself.
Yeah.
So I can be aware of how I'm dealing with them. I can try to be more patient or whatever. But I really can just worry about myself. And you know, when you do that, you let go of a lot of resentment and anger.
Yeah. And it helps your life a lot.
Boy, doesn't it?
You know, I know people that walk around with such severe anger about, say, President Obama.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can live your life just being so angry, and I feel bad for them. You know,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, it's just a tough way to live. You know,
yeah, and there's nothing, and we seem to feel entitled, like we should be able to change it,
mm-hmm.
and that's not really reality.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe what this book did is help me get more in touch with reality too.
Yeah, no question. Okay. No question.
So anyway, that was my
okay.
top list.
Number two for me is the idea that a devout life, to live a devout life, you don't have to live in a monastery. The sentence that I wrote down, it is an error, nay more, a very heresy, to seek to banish the devout life from the soldier's guardroom, the mechanic's workshop, the prince's court, or the domestic hearth. And his point there was, you don't have to live in a monastery to live a devout life. A devout life can and ought to be lived by everybody. If you're a believer, you ought to be doing things to deepen your faith or to deepen your devotion. And that's something that I took away from here, because it's like, I don't know, this kind of ties into what you just said, but I heard an interview by Jack McDevitt, which was pointed to me by Tam.
Mm-hmm. A legitimate mention, right.
That in which he said, Jack McDevitt is a science fiction writer that I like a lot.
Right, I do too.
He started writing pretty late in life, and in the interview, he explained why. He said, well, I sold this short story and I thought it would, you know, then I wanted to continue, but I realized that I could never be Charles Dickens. I would never be as good as Charles Dickens. And that stopped me in my tracks.
Oh.
And for years and years and years and years, he would just talk about it. And then his wife finally said, hey, why don't you write another short story? And it kicked him off again. And he realized that, again, you know, we're all different. We're all different. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one of his points was, hey, you're smarter than you think. And I think that the same point kind of comes out of this book to me, is you can live this kind of life. I admit that when I saw this book on the shelf throughout the years, you know, this is always one of those books that you mean to read but never do. And you'd see Introduction to a Devout Life and you're like, well, what does that have to do with me exactly? I'm not Pope John Paul II. Right?
Right.
To me, it's the same thing as a writer saying, I'm not Charles Dickens, so why do it? I'm not John Paul II, so I'm not going to attain that. But this book helps me understand that, again, like I said in the last segment, there's a path, and I'm just not on the same place in the path, but I'm on the same path.
Well, and we're not meant to be John Paul II.
No, and we're not.
Where we are, specifically to be who we are, the best us for this spot right here.
Exactly, and this book is written to people like us. It is not written, although I would imagine John Paul II probably read this, but I'm just saying I was really pleasantly surprised and happy at how this book spoke directly to me. It wasn't talking to Pope John Paul II specifically.
Oh, yeah.
You don't need to be there to read this book, what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, well, two things along those lines. One is that we always like to we forget that Christ lived 30 of his 33 years in complete anonymity in some little village in the middle of nowhere, where people go, really, can anything good come out of Nazareth? You know, so it's like living in Mississippi or something, you know, where people like to make fun of it. And so he did that. God was showing us that it's in regular life that you live your holiness, that you make a difference. And then the other thing I liked, the overall big thing I loved, is that to me, what I got out of this also was our lives are surprisingly similar to those in the 1600 French court in terms of leisure, temptations, and distractions.
Yeah, no question.
We live lives of incredible privilege, and we don't really think about it until I read this book. And he's talking about, oh, people will sit up and play card games all night long. People will, and I'm thinking, oh yeah, just like people play computer games now all night long.
Yeah.
And
there was a place in there. In fact, I'm sure that I highlighted, if I look through my highlights, where he said, you shouldn't complain because chances are that's going to be a sin. And then he said something like, think about Jesus and, you know, how he was shunned and crucified and et cetera. And your stuff is not anywhere near his stuff.
Oh,
and it's never going to be. And I'm reading this shortly after I sent out a tweet complaining about how my iPhone doesn't work.
Oops.
You know, it's like, you know,
yeah,
that was no good. And it's true. He's right. There's so much more good going on in my life than bad that I shouldn't be complaining about crap on Twitter.
I know. I can't remember if I talked about this. I think I told you about it anyway. Was one time I was sitting in mass and I was like, and then I've got this meeting next week and I don't want to go and blah, 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 blah. And like I said, I was sitting in mass. I was in front of the tabernacle and this thought popped into my head, quit whining. And I was like, oh, you're right. Sorry about that. I was like, yep.
That's amazing.
And it's just whining about nothing. Mm-hmm. Like a little kid, like a baby.
Yeah.
To me. I mean, you know, mine. But I think maybe that's also kind of why, I mean, this book has spoken to people throughout centuries. So we know that. But I mean, gosh, look how old it is.
Yeah. Incredible. Incredible.
But I think especially for our age, it has a lot to say. And one of the reasons I could relate to it so much is because a lot of the stuff he's talking about is for people who have a lot of leisure. He's not talking to the peasant who works in the fields, although they could get a lot out of this too. We all have the same problems. But, you know, when he's talking about, you know, those dances that everybody has, make sure that they're not an occasion of sin because, you know, it's okay to flirt. But if you're doing more than flirting, if you're thinking about anything else, then stop. And they just lead you into it. So, I mean, he's addressing issues here that, you know, people in our time have to deal with a lot more, or at least in our country, in the Western civilized world, do than, say, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's
somebody picking potatoes out in the field in the 1700s.
You
know,
there seems to be something that people are starting to say, I don't know if you call that a meme, where people say, yeah, this is a first world problem.
Oh,
you know,
no.
Well, I admit that this is a first world problem, but my iPhone doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know?
That's, yeah.
They're not complaining about where their next meal is coming from. You know, yeah, and that's me.
that's all of us.
Yep.
That's a human tendency, I think.
Right, right.
So.
All right. So what's next on yours?
Oh, well, mine was about patience.
Mm.
And it was just, you know, I like to think I'm patient. He kind of talks about that. He's like, well, we all like to think we're pretty darn patient. Mm-hmm. And he says, but a courageous man is quite prepared to be despised, criticized, and accused by the wicked. But his virtue is really put to the test when he is treated in this way by those who are good, by his friends and relatives.
Yeah. Hmm.
And yeah. I just like, oh, yeah, well, you know, somebody could hate me who doesn't agree with me at all. That's one thing. But if you criticized me, I'd get really mad. Okay, probably not, Scott.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, somebody else criticizes me who I like and respect, and I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. And I fight back.
Mm-hmm.
Is that really what I should do? Shouldn't I take it into perspective? Shouldn't I think about it? And, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, like assuming that the person gosh, didn't he use an example of Saint Joseph at some point in the book where he was saying, you know, Saint Joseph accepted Mary after this dream he had, you know,
right.
where he was visited by an angel and the angel told him, hey, you know, she's telling the truth. So, you know, yet he was surely looked down upon by other people. And,
yeah.
You know, it makes you think, In my life, especially, you know, who am I trying to please? And I think he talked about that too in another section of the book. I mean, this book is so full of great stuff. It's,
yeah.
you know, watch out for who it is that you're worried about pleasing.
Yeah.
You know, make
yeah.
sure that those are the right people, or if any people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think, wasn't it near the end of the book, he says, he's talking about renewing your commitment. And he says one of the points was remember to whom, or not to whom, who was present, or how did that go? He talked about in front of whom did you make this commitment? And he says, you know, basically it's the communion of saints where
yeah.
he's talking about, you know, not only God, but I'm not sure if I highlighted that. Yeah, consider before whom you promised. It was before the whole court of heaven, the Blessed Virgin, Saint Joseph, your guardian angel, and then someone named Saint Louis. I'm not sure who that is. And the whole company of the blessed, who were looking upon you with joy and approbation, beholding with love unspeakable, your heart cast at your Savior's feet. It's like, these are the people that you should be pleasing or want to. You know,
right.
And people like them on the earth, you know,
well,
not people that hang out on the internet throwing bombs at, whatever.
I know. Well, and, I had a friend who used to say, she was talking about going to confession and right now in RCIA, which I help with, people are starting to get kind of freaked out because they're going to have to go to their first confession if they've been baptized.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, you know, you're not telling the priest anything you hadn't heard before, okay? You don't have to see him. You're saying it out loud. And she used to always say, the angels and saints already watched you do this. And I'm like, oh, that's right. The only one you're fooling is yourself.
Yeah.
You know, I can't say it that bluntly to them because they're still a little too tender for that. But, you know, be nice to the weak reads and all that kind of thing. But he says here about patience and accusations. He says, I agree with Saint Gregory. When justly accused of some fault, humbly accept the accusations as more than deserved. When falsely accused, defend yourself calmly for the sake of truth and to avoid scandal. If the accusations still continue, remain quite calm and say no more. For having done your duty to truth, you should also do your duty to humility. And then he goes on to say, complain as little as possible of your troubles, for normally speaking, to grumble is to sin. I think that's
yeah,
part
that's,
you were talking
that's
about.
It, yeah.
And so, yeah, it's kind of like, for me, you know, it's, and for a lot of us, it goes back to that thing of, well, wait a minute, you should believe me, I'm right. you know? And some people I know won't listen to me, and that's fine. I don't care about their opinion, but if I care about someone else's opinion, as you're saying, whose opinion do you care about? I mean, of course I care, but I've done what I can to defend myself. Now, done. I know the truth. God knows the truth, and whoever else, move on.
Yeah, yeah.
Because otherwise, then it just turns into making yourself more important than you are.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I really was thinking about this.
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. Now, my next one, this one's a little simpler. It's simply my eyes opened to the need of a spiritual director. There's just a sentence here. If you would really tread the paths of the devout life, seek some holy man to guide and conduct you. So, I'd hoped to do a little bit of research on this before the podcast, but I didn't get that done. So I honestly have no idea how to go about getting one, but I feel the need that I should, and I will patiently, start looking.
I looked for years.
Okay, so I'm prepared for a long search. You know, we've got such a great priest here. His name is Father Perez, and I sure like it. But boy, you know, he's so busy.
Have you asked him though?
I have not.
Yeah, I used to ask our priest and say, "Where should I go?" And he'd go, "Well, that's a possibility." And then he'd never say anything. And finally was like, you know what, God, if you want me to have a spiritual director, I guess you'll provide me with one somehow. I have no clue. And although I'm in Dallas, now I know I could. If you're in Dallas, you could go to the Cistercians. They evidently will assign people. But Scott, you're a little far away. But maybe there's a Cistercian monastery.
Maybe
there.
Maybe there is. Like, maybe that's something here that I could find. You know, one of the things I was concerned about when asking a priest. I'm not sure if it's the same where you are, but our priests get moved on. You know, you're here for 5 years and then you go somewhere else for, however long it might be. And so what do you do when he moves away?
Well, if our priest gets reassigned in 3 or 4 years or whenever that is, I'll just go, well, where are you? Are you willing to still do this or not? Okay.
So you just kind of communicate it with him however you can.
Yeah. Because really you're just looking for, it doesn't have to be a priest. It's, you know, a man or woman or whoever that you feel like you could trust to talk to about your spiritual life on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Now, my priest came back to me finally one time and said, I think we need to start spiritual direction. I went, oh, with who? And he goes, me. And I went, I'm honored, because he doesn't have a lot of time. And we meet for an hour and a half every month and a half or two.
Oh, that's nice.
But you know what's been beneficial, and this might be helpful for you while you're looking, because of that, when things would happen, I keep a couple of pages open in my journal, like my quote journal, where I just make notes of things that have happened, whether prayer or, I don't know, things I'm not going to talk about right here. But anyway, and so when I go in to talk to him, it's funny, I can start to see the patterns in what's going on, and he'll make observations to me that I would never have thought of just from us talking stuff over.
Okay.
It's very helpful for that reason. But just even looking at it all down on the page, I'll look at it and go, you know, if anybody asked me, I would say nothing much happens in my life spiritually. And I look at this and go, God's working in it all the time. So that's a start.
Yeah, excellent. So, yeah, that's something that I need to do. And another thing that was mentioned in the book kind of along the same line was, he said, it's not a good idea to change your confessor all the time either. And again, you know, I don't know how you prevent that when your priest moves on, but that was an interesting point. But again, maybe confessions were different at that time and you were always face to face, but
yeah, you may have always gone to the same one. Well, and see, since my spiritual director is my priest, we do confession then.
Yeah.
So I wind up having confession.
I can see the benefit of that.
Much more often than, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and other things will pop up that I will confess that maybe we haven't discussed or anything. But yeah, It's very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, yeah, that's yep. I can highly recommend it. And I have a review book that I haven't read yet called Navigating the Interior Life by Daniel Burke. And it's about spiritual direction.
Hmm.
Let's see. Wait, here it is on the giant stack next to me. Spiritual Direction and the Journey to God. And I don't know if somebody needs to read a whole book about it, but I guess that's why I'll read the book.
Hmm.
You know, but it's things like, in fact, I just opened up to something. It's like my first meeting. End on time, write things down.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's also about how to find someone and delving a little deeper, spiritual self-evaluation, et cetera.
Right.
So anyway.
Okay.
So I guess people write books about things. There are probably other people who have written books, too, about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, okay.
But.
All right. On that path, I will.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, and for me, is it my turn, I guess?
Yes, it sure is.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's still on patience, which is a big topic for me. I don't know why that would be. But I liked this. He says, one of the best exercises of, actually, it's gentleness, I guess, is to be patient with ourselves and our imperfections. Though it is reasonable to be displeased and sorry when we fall into faults, it should be without bitterness, anger, or sulkiness. It is a great failing to be angry with oneself for giving way to anger, impatient with one's impatience, and so on. Since this only increases the original fault, and far from repairing it, it disposes the heart to fall again at the first opportunity. And actually, and he says in the next sentence, he goes, because actually what we're upset about is because we're not perfect.
Hmm.
And I liked that because it's not giving yourself a pass that's okay, but it's just being realistic and it's not beating yourself up, because I don't know about you, but you know, I was raised with a state of, you know, you should be perfect and you want to be perfect. You want to do the right thing. So when I fail, I get really upset with myself a lot of the time. And you know, I can't believe you did that again. And what's wrong with you? And he says, I liked his example from a little later on. He says, in fact, he's got an example that's kind of like that. Die of shame and never lift your eyes to heaven again, you shameless traitor to your God. You know, like, in other words, that's almost me sometimes. Mm-hmm. But he says, I would rather reprove my heart reasonably and with compassion as follows. Well, my poor heart, here we are falling again into that ditch we had resolved so firmly to avoid. Let us get up once more and leave it forever, imploring God's mercy and trusting he will help us to be more steadfast for the future. And he goes on from there, then I would make a resolution not to fall again and ask the advice of my confessor how to do that, you know. And he says, just like being gentle with other people is very effective, being gentle with yourself can be effective too. And I like that, you know, not to beat yourself up. The few times I've remembered to try it since mm-hmm. reading this, I've kind of gone, well, that is a problem I have. I'll make a note of it and I'll, you know, I might ask about it, my next spiritual direction thing. But certainly, okay, just watch out for it again. Can I avoid circumstances where this might happen? Can I think about it? Can I pray and say, you know what? Good guardian angel, could you just give me a little alert when I'm getting ready to lose it over something stupid? And, you know, that helps a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Yeah, well, I mean, I tend to sulk and go inward when I fail. You know, I'm not. Yeah, it is definitely a feeling of, you know, worthlessness and
right. I beat,
you know,
myself.
I am just no damn good, you know, that kind
yeah,
of thing.
Right.
But, you know, I tend to just become a hermit.
Oh.
You know what I mean? That's kind of yeah. what I do.
Right.
But
not worth talking to anybody.
Yeah. I'm not worthy.
Just get you into trouble.
Yeah. And that's just like my natural state, I guess. I mean, that's naturally where I go when.
Yeah.
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 Which kind of ties into my next thing. So.
Oh, go there you go.
Oh, you can go ahead and finish.
Yeah, go ahead. That was it.
Okay. You know, last year, I, you know, moved jobs. I mean, a lot of turmoil last year. And, you know, you always second guess and, you know, sometimes mm-hmm. you look back. And it's been hard for me because I loved where I was, you know.
Right.
So coming here, I had, it's been difficult for me. And when I read this paragraph, it just really, it helped me quite a bit. It's just basically the whole idea of a change and the whole idea of a compass. So he says, day is continually turning to night, spring to summer, summer to autumn to winter, winter to spring. No 2 days are ever exactly alike. Some are foggy, rainy, some dry or windy. And this endless variety greatly enhances the beauty of the universe. And even so precisely is it with man, who, as ancient writers have said, is a miniature of the world. For he is never long in any one condition, and his life on earth flows by like the mighty waters, heaving and tossing with an endless variety of motion. One while raising him on high with hope, another plunging him low in fear, now turning him to the right with rejoicing, then driving him to the left with sorrows, and no single day, no, not even 1 hour, is entirely the same as any other of his life.
That was beautiful. I loved that.
And that meant a great deal to me. Because, you know, I'm trying to look forward. You know, and, yeah. And that's one of the things that I've noticed in life. I remember one time I was married. We just had a new baby. And there was a wedding we were going to go to in Phoenix. Okay, and I went to college in Tucson, Arizona. So I thought, hey, wouldn't it be cool to zip down to the University of Arizona and check it out? It had been probably, I'm going to say, 10 years since I'd been there. So we go down to the wedding. You know, the wedding went good and everything like that. Then we drove down to Tucson. And there was a brand new hotel right in campus and everything. And we stayed in this hotel. And I walked around campus. And it doesn't take long to realize, you know, and I think everybody realizes this at some point, that you can never, ever go back.
Yeah, you don't belong anymore.
You don't belong anymore. Yeah, it's not the same. So, you know, even if you could go back to your high school or whatever, you're never going to capture what you felt when you were 18 at your high school.
Right.
You know? And the same thing's true with everything that you leave behind, every time you move or whatever. So in my case right now, I moved away from Malad, which is a place that I really liked. And, so we're starting only now. Again, what I did is I became a hermit. For the last 6 months, I did nothing, right? Except this podcast.
I wasn't thinking of this.
So you got to come out of that, or I have to come out of that, you know? So you're like, okay, I can go back to Malad. It's okay. You know, and you start to go back to Malad. It makes my daughter happy. She loves to see her friends and things. And she's doing pretty well, by the way. And but now you start to see it different. You know, the first time you go back, you realize, okay, things are different now because I'm not here anymore. And though I have some very good friends there, and they'll always be my very good friends, and we're going to keep seeing them as much as we can, that's really what it's about anyway, is the people. But if I were to move back to Malad tomorrow, it's not going to be the same as it was.
No.
You know what I mean? Because that place is gone.
There's no movie theater close enough to walk to, for one thing.
No question. So
you're going to miss that.
I'm not saying that I want to move back to Malad.
Yeah.
But yet I mourn it some, right?
Right.
But
that's normal.
It is. I think it's totally normal. But I'm just saying that this paragraph says, okay, you're going to experience a lot of different things, and you're not going to have, not even an hour, is going to be the same as another hour in your life.
Yeah.
And anyway, that just meant a lot to me. And then I got to add to that, and I didn't, the idea of a compass, which I believe is in the next paragraph, which I don't have in front of me. But the next paragraph says, even though things are different, what's constant is basically who you're facing. If you can keep yourself faced in the correct direction, this other stuff really doesn't matter. So it's like you've got the North Star And no matter where you go on the Northern Hemisphere anyway, you can look up and there it is. So he didn't put it that way, but that's the way that I think about it is it doesn't matter where you go. You know, you've got your family and you've got God.
Yes.
And you just always just need to be pointed the right direction. And going inward doesn't really help. So again, you know, what I've done is I'm teaching confirmation now. You know, this is me stepping out of it, you know, so now I'm meeting people and, you know, outside of my immediate work and everything and, starting the new life, you know,
stepping
it just
out.
Took me 6 months to do it.
That, you know what? That's okay.
Yeah, sure it is.
Because
sure
that's part of the realization that everything's different.
Yeah. Yeah, and the acceptance of it.
Yeah,
it's it's almost like a mourning period. I don't know what it is. You know.
Well, but. And there are different times in life when you kind of really realize that more than others. I mean, you know, there's the big times a lot. You know, there's graduation and what? Mm-hmm. Now I've got to do what? But like lately, for me, it's been coming to terms with my age.
Mm.
Not that I regret being my age, which is older than yours. Well, like, since I don't regret it, I'll just say I'm 55. But, you know, oh, that was hard. But not in my head. In my head, I'm not 55.
That's right.
But the thing is that I read a book recently by Paula Houston, and I did a review of it because she did a whole book talking about that, going, our society looks at aging as, oh, fight it, exercise more, start your second career. Oh, you can color that hair. You can have those wrinkles go away. You can fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, and a friend of hers had said, you know, it used to be that being this age and older, not only were you allowed to slow down a little bit, but you could enjoy stuff around you more, but you were also supposed to start thinking about getting ready for the next life because that's the point of this life in the first place. Mm. She goes, nobody does that anymore. So the book's kind of about that. And I've kind of been, you just kind of get to this point, and my husband's been going through it too. So it's handy because we can talk about it, but it's almost, Scott, like you're saying, it's not a mourning for the way it was before, but it's an acceptance of the new reality. You know, you stand up from the couch and things creak a little bit more. You turn your ankle and it takes a lot longer for it to come back. And it's not that I'm decrepit or old and mentally I feel young and everything, but it's just reality. Things are a little different and things are going to keep getting different. And so that thing that you said about changing, I kind of keep thinking about it and it relates to that. I will take these walks every morning and I keep looking going, you know what? The sun comes up, but there's never one sunset that looks the same.
Yeah, it's remarkable.
Yeah, and it's that same thing of the turning of the seasons, and it's the infinite variety, but yet the sameness of everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, and God provides all that for us, and I'm like, so who are we to think our lives will always go along being, you know, the same as they were?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's what you're saying. It's that's I've been coming to terms with it in a different way, but I mean,
yeah. And one of the most helpful scriptures there is, I don't have no idea what chapter this is in or anything, but it's who of you by worrying can add a single hour to your life or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. And I don't know where that is, but that'd be one for your book.
That would be one. I'm writing that down first.
That's a good one. Okay, you get it first, it's been in there a long time, so I think if I take it second, I'm okay.
You go right ahead.
I just meant that
was the first thing that's going in the notebook.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, because I will spend time – luckily, I tend not to worry about that stuff too much, but to think about it at all is unusual for me.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of interesting. It's that same thing of there. It's funny how we are as people, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't want change unless you've planned for it.
Yeah.
Well, going on a nice trip, that's change. That's I'd like to do
unless
that.
Unless you've got something going wrong.
Yeah.
If something's going wrong in your life, you want change.
Right.
But if things are going well, you don't want change. You don't want anything to do with it.
It should just keep going the way it is.
Yeah.
And change
is not. It's like, all right, I found this. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Why shake it up?
Yeah, well, and life's inevitably
clearly,
about change.
Yeah, clearly there's something else ahead of me.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Okay, so what's next on yours?
Oh, well, next is... it might be related to the one I said before. Uh-huh. So obviously, I spend a lot of time thinking about my imperfections, right?
And I don't spend enough time thinking about mine, obviously.
I'm not nearly as insecure as this is making me sound. But what I liked was people, and I think Christians too, have a tendency, I think, to anything that's not a, that makes you not perfect, it's something that's wrong with you that you should fix. And that's, I don't like that attitude, but I'm never sure exactly what to think about it. And he has a section 24 where he says that we all have certain natural inclinations, which are called imperfections because they give rise to various faults and failings, which are in no way sinful. And so then he talks about somebody who was naturally inclined to sorrow. And she was so naturally inclined to it that when she lost her husband and her children, she nearly died of sorrow. He says there was no sin here. It wasn't deliberate, but it was an imperfection. Some people are lighthearted. Some are too serious. Some are obstinate. Some are irascible. Some too over-affectionate. And he goes, but they're not. There's nothing wrong with that. That's just how we are. So don't let it bother you.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of keep an eye on it, you know,
yeah,
so that you don't let it get the best of you.
Right.
And I liked that because he was pointing out that we're all different. We all have things that we wish were different.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's just how it is. Don't worry about it. And that's so different from the way people would think about Christians. You know, you got to toe the line. You have to be perfect in every way.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's not a shortage of that type of folk in church, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Yeah. And it's tough. It makes it hard for people.
Yeah. So anyway, I just kind of liked him just going, well, this is just how people are. So, you know, keep an eye on it. Don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Instead of just hammering away.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. So, yeah, that was the last thing that I had. So if you want to keep going, did you say you had five or six? I had four.
Well, I had one other thing,
okay,
which was, since I mentioned the thing about us, when we spend too much time on games, it's like, it's a job.
Yeah,
I thought I mentioned that and I was like, oh yeah, like blogging, you mean, or,
oh, yeah.
And so don't do it too much. But anyway, as he says, never argue with the enemy, give him no answer, but that of our Lord, away with thee, Satan.
Hmm.
And it made me think of, what did I was reading this in something, and I wish I could remember yesterday, and he said, the church has one answer for an encounter with evil, run like hell. I think that might have been in, I'm reading this Magnificat, a year through the gospel with Luke, you know, like line or two at a time, and then there's this little essay with each one. But I think that's what he said, run like hell.
Oh, that's funny.
Like, I like that. Don't think you can fight it. Don't, you know, oh, I'm going to beat you. No, just run away. Get behind Christ. Let him do it for you.
Something else.
Yeah, I liked that.
Well, funny.
Yeah.
Well, wow. So there's that book. You know, clearly we have not touched on all of it, and we could not, short of reading it out loud. Because, I mean, seriously, there is so much in here.
But it's a good book to have around, I think.
It is. And it is something that I definitely will refer to, because it's almost like, okay, I know where the answer to that question is now.
Yeah.
So I can, you know, grab this book and look it up.
Or even if you just wanted something where you're just like, well, I need something to read that's a spiritual pick-me-up, so to speak, and a kind of a recentering thing, but nothing too deep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is just such good basic stuff, and it's kind of like you're saying... I guess a lot of it would matter about, you know, because we are trying to get closer to God, and that's why we do it. But a lot of this stuff is just how you live a good life and be peaceful and happy.
A lot of it is. A lot of it
is. You know,
is.
It's like the best self-help book ever.
It really is, yeah. I mean, he talks about anxiety. I'm just flipping through some of my highlights
here. The thing about games and cards and sadness.
Yeah, what did he say about anxiety? I'm just... it's not leaping out at me, but
But he had a bunch of, he had several sections on anxiety.
You could fill a book just with quotes. Oh, there it is. Anxiety arises from an unregulated desire to be delivered from any pressing evil or to obtain some hoped for good. Nevertheless, nothing tends to so greatly enhance the one or retard the other as over-eagerness and anxiety. So, yeah, if you're worried about it all the time, you're fulfilling what the pressing evil wants.
Right.
Or the pressing evil is doing to you. You're enhancing it.
Right.
And if all you can think of is the hope for good, you're too eager for that, then you're missing out. You know, it's like the, some dads or whatever are constantly taking photos at Disneyland or something, and they're missing Disneyland. They're missing the experience of being there because they're always looking through the camera, you know?
Yeah, they'll look at the video later.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, this was, so did you like the experiment of,
I really did. I thought this went pretty good.
Yeah,
what do you
me
think?
Too. I
guess we'll find out if people enjoyed it or not, or appreciated it.
Well,
yeah,
I guess let us know. But I don't know if that's going to stop us.
I don't know if that's
going to
stop us at all. Yeah. So, yeah, heck, we ought to do this once a quarter or so. I don't know.
What do you think?
Or a couple times a year. I don't know. We'll talk about it.
Yeah, I think maybe
but
another
I enjoyed it. Yeah, definitely another one coming up.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
And something that would be completely different, probably. There's so many different great books.
There sure are. You know, we didn't even mention, you know, we talked about moments of clarity.
Yeah.
But is there any greater moment of clarity than what you discovered earlier today?
I forgot.
I know.
There is no greater moment of clarity. And I'm going to tell everybody who's sitting here going, I can't believe they talked about this book. I meant to say this up front.
Uh-huh.
I was flipping through Magnificat, looking at the week coming up. And I said, oh, my gosh, Thursday, when this will air, is St. Francois de Sales feast day.
And I swear that that was not planned. We had no idea.
We had no clue.
Yeah. But
like,
what a cool thing that is.
I know. So we decided somebody wanted us to read and talk about this book with each other, even if nobody listened. So
so if you're still with us, you get that. That's amazing to me. I just couldn't believe it.
That was one of those moments. I just looked at that and I went, what? And I looked at my calendar and I went, holy moly. And I turned on the computer so I could write to you about it.
Yes, that was something. Yeah, my jaw dropped. I couldn't believe it.
I'm glad you remembered that. I can't believe we didn't remember to say that.
You bet. Well, cool. All right. Well, that was very worthwhile. I hope listeners felt the same way.
Yeah, me too, because we can't really do it justice, but you certainly got a good sample of everything.
Yeah, definitely a good sample.
How it hit us.
Yeah, and read it. It's so readable. It's written for you. I wouldn't hesitate to recommend this book.
Oh, no. And the other thing I would say is there is, as I said, a spot early on where he has 10 different meditations, and he says, do one meditation every day and don't read any of the rest of this. And they're very short. They're like 2 to 3 pages long, maybe.
Yeah.
One of them's not even one whole page. But I actually did them. It was warm enough. I could sit in the backyard every day, just do one and think about it. It was really enlightening.
I thought it was enlightening, too.
I never just sit there and imagine heaven. And I never just sit there and imagine these various things.
Yeah, so some of that, you know, I'm finding, you know, I still listen to that Pray As You Go podcast. I listen to it off and on.
Right.
But some of the best moments I've had on that is where it says, okay, you know, they read a scripture to you and then they'll say something like, okay, now imagine yourself in that scene.
Yeah.
And I'm going to read this again, you know, and that's powerful. And St. Francis de Sales uses that technique as well in parts of this book.
Yeah. It's kind of classic, I think. And then, also I have a book that I got of theirs that actually kind of just takes you through the same sort of a thing week by week through the year for an entire year.
Oh, really?
Which I find kind of handy. It's not exactly the same because you're reading it, but it has a page that says, okay, every day look at this. And so it's kind of an overall thought on the day to think about. Mm-hmm. And then it has the thing about, okay, put yourself in God's presence. Now think about how the day's been. Now, let's see what God has to say to you. So read the scripture over, and there's a couple of prompts in there, like they'll say on the podcast. And you go back, and you, it says, well, okay, now so think about it a little bit. Now imagine, you know, Jesus is next to you. What would you say to him, or what is he saying to you?
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of thing. It's not exactly the same, but I really kind of like it because I don't always have time to listen to the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But I find myself doing this every day.
Yeah, that's so. It's effective, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep. Well, so now we're going to leave the world of devotional.
Yes.
Materials.
And what is next?
Next, I can't even remember the name of it. Mostly Martha.
Oh, that is. Yep, Mostly Martha.
Yes.
That's right.
It's a Valentine's Day movie. Well, I chose it for Valentine's Day. It's not specifically for Valentine's Day, but.
Excellent. And it's German, right?
It's a German movie.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Excellent.
And they made a terrible, terrible American version. So if you see something that says, like the American version, no, it's not. It was called, like, something about reservations or something. I don't know. Because Martha's a chef.
Okay.
So.
Cool. And then after that, on February 21st.
My book. Oh, Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park by Michael Crichton.
I know.
That's going to be great. I'm looking forward to that very much.
Science and dinosaurs and the chaos theory and everything.
Oh, my.
Oh, my. Oh, la, la.
You bet.
Yep.
And obviously, I need to get busy and get those next two selected. So I will have those definitely for the next show.
I know.
So
good.
Yep.
And I'm excited.
Me too. Me too. Always fun.
Yeah, it is.
Yep. This one was deep and fun.
I know it was, wasn't it? It's fun talking about that stuff.
All right. So thanks for listening for everybody.
Yes. And we'll talk to you again in a couple weeks.
Yep. See you in a couple weeks. Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast.
It's hard to say,
it's
too.
Hard to say, yes.
We're two Catholic friends talking to Scott. We're going to have to start over.
Okay.
Wait, we talk about books and movies and the traces to the one reality.
No, hold on.
We can
start over. Hold on.
Okay. All right. It's just we've been talking so much already. It's just thrown off by I don't know.